All right, our timer's going. 45 minutes on the clock.
All right, so where we last left off was the werewolves and the humans have to fight, and I don't wanna.
So I had a thought about that to make everything better.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so, first, there are two things. We have established that there is a group of vampires that are slightly more evolved than their kindred.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe not like slightly evolved, but like have retained the old ways a little better. Either way, we can cover that in a minute. So that's a possibility for a force that is manipulating the humans and werewolves into combat. Or the Nanshi.
Gotcha.
Are doing it. And like I know that we didn't. Part of it was we didn't necessarily want, like, a good-evil divide amongst the Shi. And this is kind of going in the face of that. But...
Ooh. Are you saying, though, because it was the Shi and the un-Shi, the non-Shi were the ones that...
were on the other fragment of a continent out in orbit.
I like that, because then they could try to blame the Shi or the un-Shi. And they have no idea what they're talking about, like, in all honesty. So they're trying to frame them.
Yeah, I like that. It could even be that it's a combination of those two things, that the Nanshi are using the vampires as cat's paws.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. So how would the vampires be manipulating the war between the humans and the werewolves? What purpose does that serve for the vampires?
I mean, if those two groups are in chaos, then the vampires can feed easier.
True. But do... And I'm not sure if we really got into this. How often do vampires leave their coven?
Well, I mean, except for the one, like, clan or tribe, most of them don't have, for lack of a better term, human stock animals. Like, there was only that one tribe that we established that had, like, kidnapped children and had raised them as cattle.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. So they do have to hunt.
Uh-huh.
But that indicates to me that they have a way off their continent and a way back on.
Yeah.
Is that technology or is that something inherent to them? Like, they can fly or they have, like, super jumpy powers or...
Well, if we're going to hard, dark fantasy on this, we're doing a traditional Dracula thing. They can turn into mist or bats or wolves. Like, they have some transformative capability. I can get them up.
Not going to touch that. But,
hey, yo.
But, yeah, I think that could totally work. And this may just be a, you know, plot hook for later. But that... some of the humans and some of the werewolves are coming to realize that they're being manipulated, and they don't like that very much.
I mean, almost assuredly not. Like, I almost wonder if the goal of all this, or at least, like, an excuse, is going to be the Nanshi are like, no, but these guys were starting to advance, and they will win. Like, they're just going to win.
Ooh, I like that. And we saw what happened last time.
We're manipulating y'all into just dealing with this threat. And sorry, we couldn't really... Our culture is not allowed to descend and inform you directly of events that are happening on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Just give them that high-minded thing.
Yeah. That annoyingly Q thing.
Ooh, or even... Which or I even that they're that... bound by the rules of the Shi, and they have to follow the rules of the Shi and the Un-Shi. Like, that's their excuse.
I love that. And just as a note to my listeners, I do love Q. I'm a big Star Trek nerd and I love Q. But I like that idea better. That means, though, that we need to also formulate the rules of the Shi. And I like the idea that it's going to be more no direct interference, which... it almost is kind of like in the Wheel of Time, how the Aes Sedai have, like, three oaths. The first oath is to never speak a word that is untrue, but that doesn't mean they can't lie.
I mean, yeah, that's taken directly from Shi mythology. Like, a fairy cannot lie if you ask it a direct question. They're not necessarily going to tell you the truth, but...
Right. but every single word they say is true.
Beware the elves, for they will tell you both yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you a picture of a potential kind of diagram of this planet. It's a weird one. It's not.
I like it, though.
But it's a interesting idea. Okay, so I like this idea that the Nanshi are... I don't want them to be the big bads, though. Like, I don't think there's a big bad in this world. Except maybe entropy, and you can't really mess with that.
I do.
What's the big bad, Alan?
Because this is dark fantasy, there has to be a big bad.
Oh, yeah.
Something's inside the core.
Okay.
And as it cools, it wakes up and starts sending out... What if it's not the Nanshi? What if it's the core that are manipulating the humans and the werewolves to kill each other?
I like this. Punch something for the core?
Because then the Nanshi could be trying to stop it. And you're turning the Nanshi from villains into heroes, but no one understands what they're trying to do because part of the core's gimmick is you don't remember.
I don't know that they're heroes. Like, I think they're doing it out of selfish reasons. They don't want to die. But I don't think that's a hero. I don't think we should make them heroic. So are you saying the core itself is a being that had built a planet around itself, or that the core is housing something?
I could be swayed either way.
So my proposal is Last Dragon. And so it's curled up in the core, waiting for everything to cool so it can actually break free. It can't break through the molten, but once that all cools, it can break free. And it, because, I don't know, it's like an Ur-Dragon or something. That's a magic joke. It's very good. And it can survive in the vacuum of space and go find very another planet to dominate. Thank you.
I also like the idea that it's psychic.
Oh, yeah.
But I also like the idea, because I think we have very carefully so far built this world to be very gray.
Uh-huh.
I don't kind of want the dragon to be 100% evil either.
Oh, no, it's
again, not... it's self-preservation. It's, I've got to cool this core down, like, I've got to get out.
Ooh.
Maybe.
I got it.
Okay,
so dragons, as like fantasy recognizes them, had previously existed on this world. They're not actually dragons. Like, they never demonstrated the intelligence or anything that we would normally... They were just drakes or wyverns, wyverns, whatever you want to call it. Don't at me. What if this is a true dragon, and the core is actually just like molten gold, because that's stylistically appropriate for a dragon. But this entire planet is an egg.
Yeah.
So this is the first true dragon to hatch in epochs of time. So no one really understands what a true dragon is, except maybe the Shi. And the Shi were the ones who killed the last one that laid this egg. Like, what if they're remnants of some, like, space-born hunter society whose job is to purge dragons, and they found this place and were like... We don't know if they put an egg in the core, so you guys stay here and keep watch.
Okay, I really like that. I think what...
And they lost track of the mission over time.
I think what is pushing the conflict and why there is tension and war is that the dragon is becoming frustrated because it cannot get out. And it is unknowingly, psychically bleeding that into the minds of the quote-unquote lesser species.
Yeah.
And they find themselves more quick to anger and war and destruction because of the frustration that is being felt by the dragon.
I like that, and I want to play on that a minute. So we established that at some point, some force swept through and did an apocalypse on this world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, this is a few centuries after that or whatnot. So if an egg is broken before it's fully ready, that's bad.
Very so bad.
So this like the dragon's not even kind of close to being ready to emerge yet, or it wasn't. And then all of a sudden the planet, like its protective shell around its egg, was a tiny bit obliterated, and suddenly it's just like, Alan, it's not trying to cool it. It's trying to keep it warm until it finishes growing.
Yes. I like this a lot. And that the core is its yolk. And like it's feeding on the core, but eventually the core will run out. So he has, or they want it warmed up and given more fuel so that they can continue to grow. I like that.
And war will make engines of war of some design, which will lead to fuel and will lead to things crashing into the core and providing fuel to it. And the she, or maybe even just the non-she, are actively trying to cool the core.
Mm-hmm.
Or no. One side will be actively trying to cool the core. The non-she are under the sway of the dragon. And they're trying to keep it warm. So they're pushing to war as well. The she and the un-she, once they become aware of this, are going to be like, oh, wait, no? Actually, no. Mm-hmm. And I think that allows some balance in there that we had kind of been lacking.
So that also means that the she and the un-she are working with the Murs to try to push more water into the core and devise ways to continue to cool the core down, maybe?
I think that would happen. Like, do we want to accelerate things up to that point? Because we're going to need to kind of move the Myrrh forward if that's the case.
I guess not, no, but...
That could be like a later thing, like a later hook when the she find out. I don't know if the she and the un-she...
No.
No. I think they know that they were put here for a reason at some point. It had to do with something in the core, but they don't know what it is. The non-she are under the dragon's sway, so they don't matter. They're trying to... They're pumping energy into the core somehow.
Yeah, they're wanting to push buttons.
Which I don't think the she and the un-she are unhappy about. Like, they're not going to go examining why there's energy going into the core. The core's fine. Well,
the core is holding, yeah, the core is holding the planet together. Of course you want to keep it warm.
Yeah. They're just like, yeah, that's great. Do that more. Alan.
Wait a minute. Is there a ritualistic feeding of the core that each culture has? That was maybe prompted by the non-she?
I think there is, and I think I know what it is. We have not come down yet on whether this is a tech or science world, and I think it's going to end up being, in kind of practical terms, magitech. So kind of techno-magic kind of stuff. Because I think what it is the non-she's moon continent piece houses their ship.
Ooh, okay.
The non-she's continent houses their ship, and what they've done is they've taken like a reactor or something, or like an energy transference thing, and they've installed it in these temples in the werewolf's like capital city and in the human capital city, and maybe even down in like in the vampires with that more advanced group.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, okay, you do these kind of rituals and that will like use the magitech energy to beam more energy into the core. And it like draws it off of the spirit of the person or of the collective people.
I've got an idea about that, though.
Okay.
Again, dark fantasy. These are altars, sacrificial altars.
Oh.
So here's the thing, but not traditional sacrifice. When someone dies, they are placed on the altar. And this kind of goes with the whole...
Okay.
Did you see the... This might have been a while back, but it was basically someone trying to measure the weight of a soul.
Okay, yeah.
It was like trying to measure right at the moment someone died and see if there was a difference in weight.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it's complete bunk. Like, it was not a thing. But what if the dead is put on this altar, the soul is removed from the body? Like, there is no... afterlife per se. Instead, the soul and the essence of this person get sucked up into this thing and fed into the core.
I like that. I want to go a step further with it, and I want to say what it is the altar is almost like a sarcophagus kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you do almost like what the Fremen in Dune do, is you load the body in, you seal the lid, it drains the soul, but it also like hyper accelerates all the bodily processes and extracts the actual like BDU energy out of it.
Okay.
So that when you then open the sarcophagus of like 5 minutes later, all you're left with is dust.
I like that. Yeah.
So but you're getting
hyper desiccates the corpse.
You're getting the spiritual energy and you're also getting heat energy extracted, and both are shot into the core. Like the spiritual energy is probably like processed somewhere on the ship and fed as heat, but whatever. I like that a lot.
I also like, what if there was an unforeseen consequence of the spirit part?
Okay. What sort of consequence are you thinking?
The spirit lives inside of the dragon. The dragon becomes Legion.
Okay.
So the souls and memories and emotions and feelings of these millions upon millions of people are being transferred directly into the yoke of the dragon, which all babies feed upon the yoke. So they get a distilled version of these people's lives. So like it's not individuals living in the dragon's head, but the dragon is intimately familiar with love, anger, pain, death. You know, it knows what it means in a way to be human.
Okay. I think we're going to run the risk there of this dragon having some pretty serious psychological damage.
And that's a problem.
I mean, I guess if we want the dragon to be the big bad, that's not a problem. Because it basically just becomes the final apocalypse. Like, when it hatches, it will just deliberately lay waste because it is psychotic.
But I disagree. Because it's not just evil people that were put in that sarcophagus. Good people were put there, too.
Well, sure, but if you're feeding all of that into a not fully developed mind, it's going to be getting, like, a million different points of view on life with no framework to establish its own sense of self.
Which is why, instead of it waking up as a dragon, it wakes up as the spirit of the world.
Oh.
So it is still the body of the dragon. Like, all of that's the same. But basically, the dragon's mind is overridden. And it has become the memory and the ghost of this world.
I kind of like that. I wanna offer something here to it. That one potential end line story for all this. So I feel like we're kind of setting this where the end of this world is very clearly in sight now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're in their, like, final war kind of deal. Or that is what's being geared up. That, as a potential, like, end-of-the-world hook, is there could be a method that some combination of any of these three groups of Shi, they might have to work together to find it, or one side finds it in a relic or something, who knows. But what it is that the dragon's mind and kind of all of these, like, the dragon eventually mentally, emotionally, whatever, psychologically, like, dies and it slips into a coma. So its consciousness is added to the multitude in itself, and someone else has to sacrifice themselves and basically inhabit the dragon's body with the wealth of memory and everything, and become the spirit of the world, the ghost of the world, to move on to the next world. Physical, literal, egg. Yeah, and to continue the process. So what happens at the very end is, like, the core finally shatters, and instead of a full, like, the dragon's revealed for a moment, like, kind of, like, backlit, like, in silhouette, you know, like, its wings unfurl, the whole nine, and then, like, the blast happens, and then there's just, like, some craft, probably, like, the Shi's original vessel is freed in the blast. And, like, the person who had inhabited the dragon's body uses the dragon's shape-shifting magic and appears on the bridge as themselves. It's just like, well, it worked. Gotta go. And they become kind of like the messiah figure to these now nomadic survivors. Which would give us a very nice hook to play on in a future visitation to this world, where maybe this culture just follows the dragon around now. Like, they just follow him to the new world.
So, I like this. But again, let's make it dark. Let's make it dark fantasy. So instead of, because it can't be clean. It has to be messy. It has to be painful. What is the opposite of desiccation?
It would be like massive, like, decomposing bloating.
Well, okay, not exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking crystallization.
Okay.
So whomever is going to become the ghost of the world must go through like an agonizing crystallization process.
Okay.
Where they maybe have to travel to all of the cultures and perform rituals to literally crystallize that part of the world into themselves.
Okay.
And so once they have completed that task, they dive into the core.
Okay. I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yes. My only hesitation is that we've used crystals already once, but I think it's fine.
Well, we could do instead, what if they become metal?
Metal might work better.
Like the different cultures and places are represented by different metals. So maybe steel for the humans and quicksilver for the merfolk and, you know, all of these things. Because again, that's a form of pain, you know, that they have to essentially force their body to become this other thing before dying.
Yeah, I like that.
But with all of this being said, I feel like we have to make room for our adventurers.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure we're there yet. Maybe there could be like a legend or a, you know, a prophecy, because God knows dark fantasy loves prophecy, from the she and the un-she and even the non-she of this person, the metal bearer, the one who will become the ghost of the world.
Yeah, I like that, because I think what that also does is, you know, we've talked about how much dark fantasy relies on this kind of, you know, just it's dark and painful, but unnecessary,
and hopeless.
But a necessary component of that is that there has to be hope.
Yes.
So I like that as in that's the light. That is the light at the end of the tunnel, because I think all of our adventurers are going to be pretty rapidly realizing that they are in the final stages. Like they're, yes, at the early end of it, but they're there.
So my question becomes this.
Yeah.
So far we have introduced, and this is moving away. How can I even say this? Listeners, this is moving away from the part that I normally really enjoy to the part that I enjoy less, but I feel is necessary for world building.
Uh-huh.
We have established four, technically five, possibly eight races.
Uh-huh.
So let's say that we have an adventuring party, a group of people want to play in this world. One of them wants to play a human, one of them wants to play a vampire, one of them wants to play a werewolf, and one of them wants to play a mer. How is that possible? How can we make that possible within the world? Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's not everyone.
We have to give a conceit.
Well, no, I mean, just not everyone's involved in war. Like, it could be as easy as a she brings you together.
True.
Someone observing the world, like we've more or less made the she the deity replacements almost.
True.
So I mean that's not a huge issue. I think the bigger issue is if you're gonna play a vampire, you're kind of limited to playing one of the more advanced ones, who kind of culturally view all other life as food, which is problematic. If you're going to play a mer, how do you exist out of the water?
So are we saying that we would probably limit the playable races to human and werewolf?
I don't know. I think a lot of that is, like, we're not designing a game engine here. So
this isn't necessarily a problem that we had with Crystallum or Primus, because everyone was essentially the same species.
Uh-huh.
And now we're actually getting into very different species and subspecies.
Well, and I think a big part of this consideration is, like, I know a lot of this world building is aimed, and a lot of our focus is aimed at RPG-style stuff. Like, we want to make a world that people could play in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still 100% fine. Like, you can hand-wave some of this. Like, if a she is bringing these people together, it's pretty easy for them to, like, Magitek up something that can, like, clamp around the merfolk's gills, and they can breathe then. It's fine. Like, none of this is a...
I almost feel like with this one, though, and this is not a bad thing, and I actually think this is a very interesting direction for us to go in, I feel like we're almost pitching a book.
Oh, yeah. That's more of the logical step, is that this is probably, like, a setting for a series of books or comics or something.
Which I don't think is bad. And I honestly don't think breaks are formula or premise.
I mean, all we do is build the world and then kick it out into the wide open world. That was too many worlds. World.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to point it out. It was something that I noticed. Like, I don't know. I don't want you to think it's a bad thing.
No, I definitely don't. Like, it is important to talk about, and it was something we had not yet covered. So we are in the last third of our recording for today. Let's do a little bit of outlining here to prepare for our last two episodes. Because what I'd like to do is spend episode 3 talking about all these cultures.
Okay.
And then I'd like to spend episode 4 talking about how all those kind of, like, talk about the state of the world, like, where this will all be kicking off, like, where the starting point is of whatever anyone wants to do with it, and how those cultures play into it, and then kind of wrap up in episode 4.
Okay.
So let's look at what we have here so far and see what else we need to lay out before we talk about culture. And I think the biggest thing we need to do is, what is the level of this Magitek available to everyone?
Is it available to everyone?
I think in some form or fashion it is. Like, I think...
Well, but I don't think the Gilman have it.
If they do, it's super primitive. Like, it's been limited by the Shi. Like, they're only like, here, pray to this rock and something good will happen kind of deal.
But I would love, like, at the start of this story or adventure, or, you know, the start of people using this world, is when Gilman get tech to get out of the water.
I think
that could be a huge, interesting plot hook.
Well, I think that's something we'll have to talk about in episode 3 and 4. But I think a very, very good idea with them, just something to put in our pockets and carry forward, is the instant the Shi realize what's going on, that what the non-Shi are doing, and before they figure out that it's the prophecy can apply and all that, before they figure all that out, they look at it and they go, well, we need another group who's not currently embroiled in just trying to murder each other, so let's uplift the Myrrh.
What if the water is protecting the Myrrh from the dragon's influence?
Yeah, sure. I'd see no reason why not. That's fine.
Because then it could be interesting once they get out of the water that some of them start feeling the pull.
Yeah. That's something more to be talked about, I think, next week.
Yeah.
But, like, let's carry the idea that the Shi or Un-Shi, one of those two, may suddenly realize that there is a untapped wealth of individuals that they can use to help delay things or work out their own plots and uplift the Myrrh with tech and things like that. So I
like it.
At the start, the Myrrh Gil people have at best super rudimentary things. At worst, nothing.
Yeah.
And I think a similar situation is happening with the vampires. Most of them have, like, scavenged leftovers from the previous iteration of the world before the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, like, that more advanced tribe has kind of the rudimentary tech given them by the non-Shi.
Okay.
Where do you think the humans and werewolves are at, though? Like, I think they're the hardest ones to kind of pin down.
Here's the question, though. How, quote-unquote, modern do we want to go with this? Do we want there to be the potential for guns? or are we happy sticking in Sword and Sorcery?
I don't want it to be like super modern, like maybe like early Industrial Revolution.
Okay.
For the humans and werewolves. Maybe, probably more so on the werewolf side, but...
Ooh, what if, like, the Industrial Revolution essentially had started, but that's when the dragon started to assert itself? And well, so they stopped progressing technology for the good of the people and started progressing technology to create war.
Yeah. That'll work. And I think part of it is, like, if the Shi have seeded these altars... then there's kind of part of that where someone would look at that and go, well, there's energy happening here. I wonder if there's a way that we can, like, siphon some of that off. And they start, like, kind of reverse engineering some of this more advanced magitech.
Interesting.
I don't think they're ever going to progress as far as an actual altar, but they might do something where, oh, this is drawing a certain energy off of the human body or the werewolf body, the lupin body. We can tap into that in a small way and make like almost like a magitech gun so that it's like,
I just had a real bad mental image, Matt, but I have to share it with you.
Okay.
I saw a werewolf running in a hamster wheel.
No.
To power like something because it was drawing off the lupine essence.
No, Alan. No. They're not werehamsters.
What if they were?
That's a different story, Alan. Stay focused. We have 5 more minutes. Stay focused with me, buddy.
Okay.
But what I'm picturing is, like, they have, like, it's not anything that we would recognize as a gun until it got used. Like, it doesn't have any of that form factor.
Mm.
But what it has is, it has almost, like, slots where you put your hands in to hold it and aim it and stuff. But when you go to use it, like, it clamps down on you and something actually, like, penetrates your skin.
Ooh, and it interesting.
Sucks some of that energy off to fire, like, a fireball or a magic missile variant or something like that.
Mm, so it kills them to use it.
It doesn't kill them because it's, like, probably the first...
Well, if you used it enough.
I mean, maybe if you just, like, constantly fired it for a couple weeks, you would just keel over. But I figure, like, the first few iterations probably just, like, sucked someone dry and blew up a building at the same time.
Yeah.
But eventually they wound it down and realized, okay, if we limit it, like, put in a thing that forcefully limits it to this much energy withdrawal at a time, then it also gives them time for their spirit to rebuild a little bit.
I like that. Do we want this because it takes from the spirit of the host? Do we want this to also affect the spirit of the person it is targeting?
Probably. Like, I feel like it would... I feel like what happens, Alan, is that this was kind of intended by the Nanshi. And that what it does is it's pulling some of your energy out of you. And no part of this is going to be efficient. Like, kind of by design. So some of that spirit energy is just bled off into the atmosphere and sinks down to the core. And when your blast hits someone, not only does it do physical damage, but it rips some of their spirit energy off and flings it out towards the core as well.
Oh, fascinating.
So it's just an all-around bad time.
As it should be in dark fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going for the idea that the dragon is the one kind of manipulating people into this, then...
Accidentally.
Yeah, sure. Then why wouldn't so much of what's being motivated be to... further the dragon's ends.
I dig it.
A potential squick factor is if you kind of take that idea and extrapolate it out, then what fuels their bigger weapons, like siege tanks?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of squicky, but prisoners of war got to go somewhere.
Oof. But I like that, though.
It's very dark and very bad, and it's kind of touching on, like, Warhammer levels of icky-gooey fantasy, but... I mean, because you could do in there, like, a story of... a prisoner of war captured and is shoved into, like, a battery chamber, and somehow his spirit unshackles and takes over the tank.
Yep, you absolutely could. And that's what I was thinking is, like, what worse punishment for a war criminal than to slaughter their friends?
Well, I mean, and even just like if someone on your side, like, drops, you know, does something cowardly, goes AWOL or whatever, like, well, sorry about you, but you're going in a tank.
Yep.
And I think in this world, like, the word tank arrives, not from its appearance, but from the fact that it has actual human-sized vats in it. Yeah.
Yeah, that people can, are put in.
And I imagine it's, like, this is very gross. And I apologize, listener, if this gets you real bad, because it's not pleasant to say. But I imagine there's a point where it's like, these tanks are probably the closest they've gotten to those altars, and they're not efficient. So there is, like, a human sludge at the bottom.
Yeah.
And they don't flush it until it reaches a certain point. Because that's how war works. You go to war with the minimum equipment necessary.
Absolutely.
That's very gross. What
you need along the way.
And unfortunately, we have, like, just a few more minutes. We have just a few more minutes on our clock, and that's...
To try to make that happy somehow.
I mean, no part of this is happy, Alan. It's not happy until the ghost dragon flies away to a new world.
It's not happy fantasy.
It's dark fantasy.
Listen, I think we all understand at this point that this world is done. It has run its course.
Oh, yeah.
It is
ruined. It's super boned.
Yeah. So really hopeful that that some plan comes together of a coalition of people that can repair the she ships and can load up refugees and make it off. But who knows? That's for episode 4.
Yep.
Okay, so the tech that we just described, is that more or less like, is there a parity between the werewolves and humans on that?
Yes, and I'd say that the werewolves are better armed.
Okay, I was kind of... I like that because they don't have the numbers. Like,
they don't have the numbers, and they already have something inherently magical about them.
Okay, so their energy is just...
Their spirit is a little bit more intense.
Intense or entombed?
Yes.
Okay.
What do you mean by entombed?
Well, like what I'm wondering...
Like, in tune with the dragon?
Yeah, like in tune with the world energy a little bit that's kind of been created by this dragon.
Okay. So does that mean that the werewolves are more of the aggressor in this conflict because they are held under a stronger sway?
I don't think so, just because I think that they're adapted to that magic because it literally permeates every cell of their being. So I would imagine the humans are actually the more aggressive ones because they're not as touched by magic as the Lupins are. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea would be that, like, the werewolves don't have the numbers, and they're also a little bit more inured against this kind of magical effect. The humans are just like, hey, we got millions of people in very little land. We're going to take yours now. Bye.
Yeah. Colonialism.
Well, it's what we're known for as a species. We're very bad.
Very bad.
And this is coming from two white men who are, you know, representative of all of history, where it said, look, these white men are dangerous.
I'm not even going to go there.
I'm a historian, my dude. I understand exactly what those before me have done.
It's I just like, in my head, I'm going back to, like, the powwows and stuff that I did with my tribe. And just like, yeah, no, the white man is dangerous. And you feel real awkward because you're... You present as white.
Present as white, yeah.
So it's like, yeah, we are, I guess. So,
but yeah. Good.
I like what we've done so far and where we're going with this. I feel really strongly about this one, Matt.
I think this is very good. I think we're, like, it's dark. I think we're definitely staying on brand with this genre. So, I am interested to see what happens with this. And once again, we had to vamp a little bit, but we got there.
Yep, that's time. Bye.
See y'all next week. You can find Alan at Alan_Sells on Twitter. You can find Matt at Matt Hoadley on Twitter. You can reach the show at Forging_Worlds or by emailing us, ForgingWorlds@FifthDraw.com. This show and the rest of the Fifth Draw family of shows can be found at fifthdraw.com.
Forging Worlds is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.